Curiosity is a gift we start with but often lose. So what about those people who are still curious? The ones with a thirst for learning, who approach the world with questions rather than judgment, embrace a non-linear life, and look to leave things better than they found them. These people are what I call grokists. I'm your host, Daniel Poyner, and on the Still Curious podcast, I talk to grokists from many walks of life about their squiggly journeys, the lessons they've learned, and the red thread that runs through it all. And now let's hear from today's guest.
I told her what's happening at school. She got emotional and teary because she did not think we were talking about the same child. I was really proud of that because I did not expect this person would be able to actually talk at all.
You're listening to the Still Curious podcast with me, Daniel Poyner. My guest today is Travis Uen, who is a special education teacher based in Auckland, New Zealand. Travis migrated from Taiwan and trained as an early childhood educator before later moving into special education. In this episode, we discuss the day-to-day realities of leading a classroom full of kids with special needs and why it's so important to adapt and improvise.
It changes daily when one or two or all the students settled by something, we have to throw out the plan for that day. My mind is constantly planning and thinking what's going to happen in the next 10, 20 minutes.
Travis shares his views on free play approaches and the similarities and differences between early childhood education and special education.
The students show you the interest and then you plan along the journey to guide them to go further and to go up a level. If you just dump a basket of blocks on the table for them to do whatever they want, that's not intentional planned experience.
We also discuss Travis's experience of migrating from Taiwan and why it matters to him to follow his own path.
I figure out that's the only way I can actually get out of the system as soon as possible to do well at school, so no one will actually bother me and let me do what I want to do.
It's a fun, fascinating, and surprising conversation. I learned a lot. I hope you will too. Enjoy, it's Travis Uen coming up right after the music break on today's episode of the Still Curious podcast. Hi, Travis. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good.
So you're a classroom teacher at a special school that describes itself as having a holistic approach where students can expect to be supported in their personal, social, emotional, and educational growth by participating in personalized learning programs. What would you say is the most important thing for someone to understand about what you do?
Everything is pretty much similar to a mainstream school, but we kind of slow down everything. Like we don't need to actually get them to achieve certain milestones as the mainstream school students do. For special needs students, you need to actually know what they can do, what's their ability, what they're interested in doing. And also what's the best approach for each of the students instead of using the same approach for the whole classroom. We call it play-based learning. For example, making Play-Doh, which is probably one of the most popular activities at school. You set up this activity, they engage in making it. So during the time you're making Play-Doh, they learned math, because they have to measure the ingredients. They learned, they developed their literacy skills because they're not only counting, they also learned how to read recipe, the names of the tools. Also, while they are engaging in the activities, they're focused, they're calm, which is good for their emotional growth. So that's the kind of thing that we try to do at school. We don't just teach them. We don't just sit down and say we are learning the alphabet today. But we use songs or a game for them to actually learn those knowledge without knowing that they are actually learning. They just like naturally remember what's happening. And of course, we try to make the activities fun and inviting. So they just naturally want to come and know what's happening. So they learn.
Makes sense. Thanks for sharing that. I'm keen to understand a few more examples of holistic learning and the personalized learning programs, what goes into those. But I guess before we get into details, we should probably address this category that we call special education. How would you explain what special education is to, say, a 10-year-old who doesn't have direct experience of it?
So the difference between my students and mainstream students, it's more like they have emotional behavioral issue, or they have shorter concentration spans, or they can't control their emotions when things don't go their way. So I just need to find out how long they can actually focus on engaging one thing. Then they just need a break. They need a break in between activities before they have a tantrum. That will be a success. That would be a success. So you just need to figure out how everyone works. Some students can actually focus on doing something longer than others. You just need to know how each of their systems work, and then you have those breaks in between that actually help them engaging in those periods while they learn.
That makes sense. Is that a common kind of scenario in your classroom situation where people can't handle their emotions?
I have 7 students in my classroom, and they're all pretty much on the spectrum of autism. Some of them are more capable than others. They can control their emotions. They can learn more. And others, it's pretty much like they can't deal with frustration. They are like really thinking directly only about themselves or what they want to do. If things get changed or doesn't go the way they expect it to, they can't handle it. So they have a meltdown, they cry, they scream, they will try to do what they want to do. Yeah.
How do you engage with that kind of situation when that happens?
We're kind of trying to find a balance between what they want to do and what we want them to do. Let me think. I have a student who is sensitive to noises. And I have another student who screams whenever he's angry or upset. And whenever the screamer screams, that will set the other student off.
Like a chain reaction kind of situation.
So it's not only two of them. So I have one that's sensitive to noise, one that who screams, one who just shouts whenever he's happy or for no reason, and one will cry whenever he doesn't want to do what he's asked to do. So pretty much these 4 people, they kind of settle each other constantly every day. So what we need to do is to try to minimize or reduce the time they actually scream or shout or cry to try to keep the whole classroom calm.
That sounds intense. Can you kind of tell when this is going to happen? Can you detect, oh, this is going to set people off?
Yeah, because actually a lot of things can set them off. First of all, the noises we can't control. So like the sound of cicadas.
Very specific.
Yes, and long mowers outside the window, or any machine that's being operated outside the window that we can't actually stop immediately, that will set someone off. Or even during our group time, okay, so I can talk about someone else who hates gingerbread man story. Whenever I play that story, he just screams and cries and try to run out of the classroom. So those noises will set one person off. And for me to stop the story, for who liked Gingerbread Man's story, will set them off because they want to continue listening to the story. So that constantly happens. I just need to know the timing when I can actually stop the story or when I can start a story or song. So my mind is actually planning, thinking ahead all the time.
Yeah, it sounds like quite a complicated balancing act, and you'd have to be quite good at improvising. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I just need to know them very well. So we have a morning circle time when everyone's sitting at the table, saying, greeting everyone, choosing a song that they like. So I know who can have a turn first. And once they have their turn, they can leave the table. So they wouldn't get affected by what's happening next. Yeah, so for me, what's most important thing is to build relationship with them. Even for mainstream students, relationship is important because it doesn't matter how good you are as a teacher. If no one wants to be around you or curious about what you're doing, they're not going to learn anything. So especially these students, they have more or less emotional behavioral issue. They want to feel comfortable and be in a familiar environment. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a good relationship and they wouldn't even get close to you.
How do you go about getting to know the students? I understand that would be very important. How do you approach that?
The first thing is observation. You observe the student to find their personality, their interest, and their behaviors or the habits or fear that they have in their life, like eating, learning, how they play, how they react to instructions. When I was working as a preschool teacher, we usually spent a month, usually 4 to 6 weeks, to observe just one student and find out what they are really interested in doing and learning before we plan anything for them. In the beginning, it can get pretty full on, but once you get used to it, as the time goes, you get to know them, they get to know you more, so you kind of know where they are going in their learning journey.
Hence the very personalized kind of programs.
Yes.
You mentioned there were 7 people in your class. Are the people in the class all the same age, or are they at different ages?
Okay, that's a really good question, because the students are placed in certain class according to their condition or their ability. We have a classroom where the students are more academic, they're more communicative, and they're ready to go to a satellite class in the mainstream school. And we have more sensory class where they learn through their senses.
Okay.
So you don't plan too much academic activities for them, because that just doesn't make sense. They enjoy more in exploring with materials. Yeah, so that's pretty much how the setup is. For my class, I pretty much have a entry class because they're all just turned 5, or they just transition from a preschool to a school setting.
Okay, thank you. So I'm intrigued by the holistic approach and the personalized learning programs. How do you go about creating a personalized learning program? What kinds of things are important to consider when you're doing that?
First of all, the ability. Mm-hmm. We call it age-appropriate activities. Again, you build relationship, you observe them, so you know their level of learning and development. Also, we try to get them to learn based on their interest, so that'll be easier for them to actually want to explore new stuff. I have a student in my class who is physically capable, and he's pretty much academic. He just can't talk that much, but he shows that he's interested in, like just a few weeks ago, he was singing the songs of different film production companies, not those songs before the movies. And then he started writing the names of like DreamWorks, Columbia, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We were shocked because we had no idea that he knows how to write. Yeah. So I just built on that. I start printing out those like movie posters or the names of the production company. And he started doing tracing, and he was watching a video on YouTube about those movie things. Mm-hmm. And then I teach him how the alphabet. I don't think he knows all the alphabets, but I was just teaching how the alphabet works while he was writing. So I'm not asking him to memorize all the letters, but he was kind of slowly, gradually remembering what the words say and how to spell them.
So you're being quite spontaneous in adapting to something that's coming out in front of you, it sounds like, and changing your plans based on...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to understand how that works, because you've got this kind of curriculum sitting behind things that you need to hit. And I really like the phrase you used before about balancing what they want to do with what you want them to do. It sounds like a really nuanced kind of thing. How do you approach that, and can you sort of share any examples of it?
I'm trying to find out how it works too, because in early childhood education, you change the topic once the child's interest changed.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have a set time focusing on one subject or learning areas. It's changing all the time according to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm in the school setting, as a primary school setting, we do have plans for the whole, say, school term. I don't actually follow the term plan sometimes. I try to, but sometimes it's hard. What I do now is I plan something for the students to learn for the term, and they don't need to achieve it. If they don't achieve the goal that we set for them, it can go on for the next term and just keep going until they get to a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to push it, or we don't have that pressure from mainstream school that we need to learn certain content in a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how often you stick to the plan and how often you throw it out and which is better.
I don't throw it out. it changes daily. We have daily plan, weekly plan, term plan, that kind of thing. I try to stick to the plan, but usually when one or two or all the students kind of set off by something on the day, we have to throw out the plan for that day, and we just carry on the following day. So there's no end. We just keep going along.
Constantly adapting.
Yeah. So we run the program as a group, and it, once they've done what they asked to do, say one teacher aide can take a particular student out in the playground as a break or a reward, and leaving the rest of them in the classroom, and they can scream, they can shout, they can do whatever. Yeah, so we just need to take turns and know when to remove someone from the situation or environment. And then once another person achieved what they need to do for the day, they can go out for a walk and the other person can come back. So it's constantly changing the plan just to kind of coordinate with everyone's needs.
Is that a skill that you bring into your life outside the school, being able to adapt and change your plans?
I am a really organized person. But I work, I kind of take that skill to extreme, because my mind is constantly planning and thinking what's going to happen in the next 10, 20 minutes. And I'll let my teacher aides know, so we know how to manage to keep everything calm and manageable. It's kind of hard to explain. If you don't see it, it starts from the beginning of the day. When they come in, you already know someone come in a good mood or not. So you plan, you start your planning from that point.
Yeah. So thanks. Zooming out then, I'm interested to understand how you came into this line of work. Is there something that particularly resonates for you about special education?
No, not really. Like I said, I used to be a preschool teacher. I had so much fun working with children under five, until one day I left the job.
Mm-hmm.
to do something else. I try to put this in a nice way.
Well, put it in an honest way.
Okay, so I did not enjoy working with some adults. I found it more challenging to deal with adults than teaching young kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I thought, okay, I did this for more than 10 years now. It's time for a change. Because of COVID, I had to come back to teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to do the same thing again. So I started exploring other fields of education.
I think we better back up here. You tell me the story. We'll come to the early childhood education. But was something in education always plan A for you?
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you why. But that's the only thing I wanted to do when I was a child, when I was a kid.
When's your earliest memory of thinking, oh,
when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
When I was in kindergarten, I told my mom that I'm going to be a teacher. And I play marking paper and pretend teaching the stuffed toys and stuff, things like that.
Wow. So it really was, there was no doubt that it was going to be education.
Yeah. And I don't know why.
Don't know. Do you know why now? We often say, you know, you have to live your life forwards, but you only understand things backwards. Is it something you have a reflection on now?
I thought I just enjoy helping others. I like to see how students grow or learn something new. I thought education is a very important thing in like everywhere. It's not business. It's not something that you actually make money out of. It's more like developing people for a country, for the society, for the environment. Yeah, I'm enjoying that. I enjoy seeing people grow. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. So you trained as an early childhood educator, is that right?
Yes.
Can you share anything about that experience?
I always enjoy more kind of open-ended learning situation growing up. And I can't say I experienced that when I was a student back in Taiwan, where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to New Zealand and I realized I can do everything the opposite way of my experience growing up.
Oh, really?
And it worked.
Okay, could you tell me a little bit more about that? What was it like in Taiwan?
Oh, it's pretty much you listen to the teachers, you listen to your parents, you do what they want you to do. And I didn't think, I need to put this in a very nice way.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do two takes. You can do a nice way and then you can do an honest way.
Okay. The nice way is that I just thought I see myself as a pretty creative person, open to learning, trying different things. But I don't think I experienced that growing up until I came to New Zealand and I decided to study early childhood education. And I realized I don't need to limit myself or the students to do what, I don't know, the society wants them to do, want them to be or achieve certain things at certain age and certain environment. It's more about exploring. When I first worked in an early childhood center, my parents would be upset listening to this, but I remember that I was not allowed to be messy at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I lead the students to be messy during art activity. And I remember I was told to draw or create certain things that the teacher wanted me to do when I was a kid. So I led my students to what they want to create. And everyone was happy and learning and everything was fine. It's not the end of the world. And I just liked the feeling of that. And I was told I did the right thing. And actually, a lot of people ask me, how do you know how to do it? Because you didn't grow up here. I said I just do the opposite of what my parents want me to do.
Well, that's a good rule to live by, isn't it?
I know, yeah. But I did, yeah. My mom's not happy about this.
So is that a very conscious thing? Just starting to do the opposite?
Yeah, at the beginning, yes. Now I'm used to it, so I don't need to have that mindset anymore. It's very natural when I talk to a student or young kid, even my nephew or niece. I don't actually have assumptions or too much expectation or what they need to do or listen to me all the time.
Given your experience in Taiwan that you've described, have you had yourself a learning experience where you've been able to take that exploring, curiosity-based kind of messy approach?
At school, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was trying to learn, I have other interests like singing. I was singing in the choir. I enjoy painting, creating, drawing, that kind of thing where I don't need to listen to anyone. Then yes.
This not having to listen to people's kind of, it's a bit of a theme I'm detecting.
Yes, because I know what I'm doing. So I know where I'm going. I know which path I'm going actually to go. No one knows because they're not me.
Yeah, you know best how to be you.
Yes. So, yeah, but at school I can't. I had to listen to the teachers and pass the test and stuff and did the exams and learn what I was supposed to learn.
Yeah, and did you?
Oh, I was a top student uh-huh, all the way uh-huh. through. I figure out that's the only way I can actually get out of the system as soon as possible to do well at school so no one will actually bother me and let me do what I want to do.
So doing what you needed to do kind of gave you the freedom later to be left alone, it sounds.
Yes,
like.
Yes. Mm.
And what do you do when you're left alone to your own devices and follow your own path?
Oh, I sing, I dance, I create artwork, I make my own clothes. And
your own clothes?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I'm really good at sewing. I don't know why. Never learned professionally. I don't know how to use this sewing machine, but I sew by hand. Yeah.
What kinds of things do you make?
All sorts of things. Like I put two old t-shirts together to make a new one. Even haircut. Oh. Mm-hmm. I did my own haircut at school because I didn't think anyone would do it the way I wanted. So I started developing these skills to kind of cater to my own need.
Yeah. You sound like you've got very clear ideas about what you want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. I'm curious, is there something else you want to share before we move on?
I just love languages and I have I have no other talents, but when it comes to language, I tend to learn them quite quickly. I don't know why, and they're just one of my interests.
How many languages do you have?
I speak Mandarin, English, I understand Cantonese. I speak a little bit of Japanese and Spanish. I'm learning Russian at the moment. Yeah, so I try to create some more connection with my half Taiwanese, half Russian nephew.
Right.
Yeah. I don't master the language, but I seem to be able to learn them quite well.
Yeah, you pick them up quickly. It sounds like you are interested in using them to kind of connect with other people. Is that
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I thought if I could talk to most of the people in the world, that would be a very cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I checked Mandarin, English, and Spanish are the three most spoken languages.
Mm-hmm.
And I already know two. Why don't I learn Spanish as well? And my cousins living in Paraguay who speak Spanish. So I thought, okay, I can give it a go. That's why.
Well, I like this give it a go thing. I think that does you great credit. Can you say, I follow my own path in a language of your choice.
Okay, I can try in Mandarin. 我跟随我选择的人生道路.
Glorious. Thank you.
Thank you so much for embarrassing me.
You're a good sport. Just to loop back a bit, what drew you to New Zealand? How did that move come about?
So I always have a thing of improving my English growing up, and I became a English teacher in Taiwan. My major was social studies, but
right.
I can also teach English. And I thought, if I never lived in an English-speaking country, how can I teach people to speak English in a real, in an appropriate way? Because, you know, mm-hmm. those things we learned from textbook doesn't count.
So it was a very conscious thing about getting some lived experience that would prove your expertise?
Yes. And I came here for holiday in my second year of uni, and I really enjoyed it. I had so much fun. I met great people. My host family was amazing. I met really good friends. Yeah, so I thought I could maybe come back here to do something.
Nice. And so that was it. That was the decision, mate. Wait, was that the nice version or the honest version?
That's the nice version.
That's the nice version. And now tell me the honest version.
The honest version is that I just don't like all the expectations in the Asian society environment. Mm-hmm. From the family, from the society, from pretty much everything, that you have to do really good. You have to have good grades to proceed or to succeed in your life and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like, everyone has their own mindset of how other people should live their lives, including my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just trying to run away from that.
And has that worked out for you? Have you got what you need from that move?
Yeah. Didn't I tell you about the success that I had at work? I just did everything the opposite way.
That's right. It seems to be working. You mentioned that you found it challenging in the early childhood role dealing with the adults. Can you explain a bit what was challenging?
How do I say this?
Honestly.
Okay. Yes, I know. But I told you earlier that we observe the students and then we extend their learning based on their interest. For me, that's normal. You do that for everyone in your classroom. However, I work with some people who observe them, get to know them, and then stop. They do not extend. They do not plan anything for the students to grow based on their interest. That's what they believed as open-ended learning, but that's not true. The truth is the students show you the interest, and then you plan along the journey for them to guide them to go further and learn more, to go up a level. I observe them too.
Mm-hmm.
The children just come to a classroom and they find the toys they want to play with all the time, with no instructions or any further learning. They just come here to play. That's not how we learn. If you only do the same thing over and over again, how do you develop more skills, know more about what you're doing?
Why do you think those people were not doing that?
The teachers still need to do intentional planning. So I don't see any of that. We're not talking about putting toys on the table and for them to play with. That's it. There will be a reason why you do things with the students. So building Legos, the language that you use during the activity, or you show them photos or the structures for them to actually copy. That's all something that they can actually learn and decide whether they want to go further or not. But if you just dump a basket of blocks on the table for them to do whatever they want, that's not intentional planned experience.
So this is a really interesting point to me, Travis, because You know, you've talked a bit about your experience in Taiwan and some of the reasons why you left and what you were looking for, and that exploration and that extending of people and developing people was not really part of the experience you personally had, but it's very important to you, it sounds like, to be bringing that to your practice as a teacher. How do you explain that you are able to do this in the classroom, but the people you're working with weren't necessarily able to bring that mindset to their practice?
In the beginning of my teaching days, there were more people like me. So when we come across someone like what I just described, we kind of prove them wrong. But as the time goes, there are more people like them.
Like them.
Yeah. So people like me, they will think us to be wrong. And we just complicated everything. From my experiences, that's what kind of frustrated me at the time. We often argue about the meaning of free play. Some people believe that free play is that children just choose whatever they want and we don't need to do anything.
The way you explain it makes it sound to me like there's a version of it where the teacher takes some responsibility and a version where the teacher doesn't take some responsibility. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes and no, because they do take responsibilities because they provide materials, but then there's no extension from that experience.
I'm lingering on this point a little bit because it seems really important. You've talked about how you were always going to be in education and what teaching and education means to you. And yet you're in this situation frustrated enough to leave the profession to do something else. So I want to understand what that was like for you.
I work in several different EC learning centers. When you first go into a new environment, you can definitely see how the children behave to tell what kind of guidance or learning they're being provided with. You can just tell from the way they act, they talk. You can clearly tell the difference which group they're coming from. For adults, it's more like we can initiate actions to find more knowledge that we are interested in knowing. But for children, they need people to guide them because they pretty much learn from zero. To be honest, when they grow up to a certain age, everyone is pretty much the same. It's not that important after a while, but I just thought if you call yourself a teacher, you should provide the opportunity for them to actually explore as much as they could. You don't just watch them. It doesn't sound very nice.
but it sounds honest.
Yes, that's what I mean. I'm a bit too full on. I'm crazy about this early learning.
I can tell it matters to you very much.
Oh, yeah. God, this is really intense.
Well, let me change tack then. I noticed you spent a little while doing cabin crew for an international airline. How did you get into that?
An opportunity came up and I took it. That was just I happened to talk to someone at the birthday party who used to work for Air New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about visiting my family in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And I said, I actually didn't have many chances to go in the past few years. And he suggested that I should try to be a cabin crew. Then I can visit them because Air New Zealand flies to Taiwan.
Yeah.
And I didn't take that seriously until a few days later, he sent me a link of the ad. I didn't expect to do anything, but there happened to be a long weekend. I think that was Queen's birthday. So I thought they wouldn't hurt if I just fill out the form. And I did.
And the rest is history?
Not really. I had to go through four rounds of interviews after filling out the form. I didn't expect to get a job, so I just keep doing what they asked me to do. And eventually I got it.
There you go. It sounds like quite a lot of work to go through for something that you that you weren't expecting or necessarily looking for.
Yeah. And I had a fear of flying. So I never thought I could become a flight attendant. I was trying to just get out of what I was doing.
And this came up, I understand. What's one of your best memories from that time?
I happened to work with a manager that was very friendly and kind to me on my birthday to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. We had one flight previously together. That's how we got to know each other. And then we realized we have another flight in a week's time. And he knew that was my birthday. He bought a cake without me knowing.
That's nice.
Yeah. So he used the passenger announcement to tell all the passengers that it was my birthday. So they sang happy birthday to me. And we had a party at the back of the plane.
Oh, that's nice. There's some good stuff on the plane to have a party with as well, yeah. I imagine.
Yeah, I spent 50 hours celebrating my birthday because that was a Sunday in Auckland. So I already had my birthday party before the flight. Yeah. And then the flight was 13 hours. Mm-hmm. And when we got to Vancouver, it was still my birthday. So we went out. Yeah, so we went out for dinner and drinks. After that, so it was about 50 hours celebration.
Now that is a pretty cool story, extending the birthday across multiple time zones and continents.
Yes.
That's pretty stylish.
Yeah, so that was my best memory, I think.
Did that experience change you in any way? Not the birthday so much as the flying experience.
I wanted to take on that job. To kind of push myself out of my comfort zone because, you know, I have limited social circle with the teaching job. So I wanted to see if I could actually communicate with people that I don't know. It did help me. Actually, two weeks after I started flying, I remember chatting with the Uber driver.
Oh, yeah.
I was with my sister and she was like, what were you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I just like naturally started talking to everyone.
Oh, wow. So it really did change you.
Yes. That did help me jump out of my comfort zone and I become more sociable, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah.
I take it. Is COVID what put a stop to the flying career?
Yes. Fortunately and unfortunately.
Well, why fortunately and why unfortunately?
Unfortunately, that just put a stop to my traveling life. Mm. But fortunately, I think my passion is still there about teaching and I have so much fun now.
So COVID put a stop to the flying and then you decided to come back to teaching. And is that how you got into the special education area?
Again, this opportunity came up in this special school, so I took it.
Was that daunting at all? Is it a bit of an unfamiliar situation?
Yes, of course. In my teaching days as a preschool teacher, we always had one or two students with special needs in the class, but I didn't know what it would be like working in a school where they are all students with special needs. So
that you had some experience of it, but yeah, it's a different situation. When
actually my first kid with special needs with autism in my life is still in this special school.
Oh, wow.
That's why I know there's a special school there. Yeah, he's still there. He's 12 probably. Yeah, when we found that he was autistic, he was one. And he stayed in my classroom until he turned 6.
What happens to the kids who've had this kind of experience of holistic and personalized learning when they leave that environment and go into either another learning environment or life situation that's not like that?
To be honest, I don't know. In my school, they can stay in my school until they turn 21.
Wow.
But of course, before they leave the school, we have life skill or like vocational programs for them to learn how to work. If they are able to kind of learn how to be in a professional working environment, they will be in those programs before they leave school. But after that, I actually don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you use anything from your early childhood education practice in the special school situation that you bring over?
Yes, all the time. Even though the primary teaching training and early childhood education training, two different programs, but for the students I work with, their development is obviously a few years behind or delayed, which make them in early childhood stage. So I thought it would be useful if I can use what I learned before, which is too, because you still need to build relationship and find their interest to know how that you can help them. So it's pretty much the same, but in the primary school setting, you need to bring academic aspects into the whole, which is not happening in the early childhood education level. So I've been learning to do that, to kind of incorporate both in my classroom.
Is it difficult to find someone's interest?
No. No, not really. If you watch them, if you just leave them alone in the classroom and the first toys they will touch, or if you play certain songs or story, they immediately will come over and try to get engaged in it. That's really obvious. Just like watching an adult, because adults can pretty much tell you what they like, but also through conversations and observation, you know someone's interesting what you're talking about or not. That's obvious.
That strikes me as very true. Although I think something happens sometimes to people as they get older where they kind of forget what they're interested in, and they kind of, it gets muted in their lives. Not everyone keeps this interest and this exploration close to the surface. It goes away for a lot of people.
Yeah, because as an adult, I can choose whether I want to explore something today or if I want to do something about my interest or hobby. But in school, I don't think that's the case. Students are expected to actually learn something or engage in learning activities at school. So they can resist it, but more or less, they will have to be involved in things that the teachers plan for them.
That comes back to what you're saying at the start about balancing what they want to do versus what you need them to do.
Yeah, we're learning to be resilient. And also express yourself. For me, in the classroom, if they're able to express that they don't want to do something, I will listen. If they throw a tantrum or they cry or they scream, I leave them alone. We're constantly teaching them how to communicate. If they actually learn to say, no, I don't want to do it, or I want to do it later, then I definitely listen. Yeah.
That's pretty powerful. I think there's probably some adults who could stand to learn that as well.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just remembering long years of customer service.
Oh, exactly. Definitely. Yeah.
The holistic learning, personalized learning programs, following your interests and this kind of exploration, guiding scenario that you're talking about sounds really great. I'm now starting to wonder, why don't we do that in regular education? Do you have a perspective on that?
Ah, okay. So I'd like to know too, because there's apparently a big gap between early childhood education and the formal school education in New Zealand. So that's something that I personally wanted to find out. Why there's a big gap between that? So they experienced open-ended explorative learning in the first 5 years of their life. Once they get into a school, the approach changed. Yeah.
It seems almost a shame that someone should have to go from, as you say, a few years of exploration, curiosity-based learning, that someone should have to adapt to something that's kind of inferior.
Yeah. What I've learned now, there are more and more primary schools, they are bringing this play-based learning or open-ended environment kind of setting into their school environment. So it's probably changing. It will take time, but it's not going to happen at once.
No, these things do take time.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, in listening to you talk, the care that you have for the kids and the students and their development really comes through. And I'm wondering if you have any stories you want to tell about experiences you're particularly proud of or that have resonated with you strongly in your teaching.
I'm not good at talking good about myself.
Well, let me help you out a bit. Okay. Because I found that you have received a couple of Teacher Excellence Awards.
Yay! Yeah, okay. Whoa! Whoa! In 2016
and 2012. So tell me about that.
How do you know that?
I always do my research.
Okay. I was going to talk about the proud moment as a special ed teacher, not the past. To be honest, I don't think there should be a scale or a comparison between teachers, because whatever you do in the classroom depends on the students that you come across. Different approaches. You can't say who's better and who's the best one. So I actually told my boss that not to give me an award after my first award, because that doesn't make sense.
And they didn't listen, seemingly, because you've got two.
But I was brainwashed over the years saying it's not a competition, but it's just a way that they appreciate your work. Just a way to say thank you for your work. And I was kind of okay with that.
I think that's a good point. I learned at some point that awards, because awards make me very uncomfortable personally also, but they're kind of often more about the people giving them than the person receiving it. It's something that other people get from the experience.
Yeah.
And it sounded like you were going to tell a story from the special education space that you were proud of.
So I had two nonverbal students joining my class beginning of the year who never spoke before. And one day, so I of course, I just trained them to recognize their name, the letter. I don't do anything further than that. I just keep doing the same thing over and over again, matching letters in their names, reading same books over and over again. And we teach them how to communicate using signs and visuals. And one of them, one day, suddenly, he pointed to the words on the sign and said, "I need some food." He said it with words.
Wow.
And he spelled his name. He's got a really long name. But one day, he just did all the matching himself and started spelling his name whenever he sees it. I did not expect that at all.
You must have known the significance of that as it was happening.
Yeah. His parents, as a central worker, I told her what's happening at school. She got emotional and teary because she did not think we were talking about the same child. I was really proud of that because I did not expect this person would be able to actually talk at all in a few weeks' time.
That's amazing.
I'm going to cry.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing, I think. What strikes me about that is just the persistence without expectation that you have to do what you're doing. That sounds like a big part of what you do, actually.
Yeah, so you don't actually need to rush or trying to get them to do what you expect them to do. You just keep doing it. One day you'll see the progress and then you move on. So that's just one of the examples. There are so many. It's not only me. My team is really good. The two ladies I work with as my teacher aides, they also kind of support me all the time. And we have constant discussions about how to support students' learning. I'm really appreciative of what they do as well.
It takes a village, as they say.
Yeah. Another child, the one I mentioned earlier, who screams all the time. And after 1.5 terms, he stopped screaming. he started using words saying, help, please.
Oh, wow.
And every morning I asked one of my teacher aides to read him same book over and over again. And one day we just caught him reading the same book, turning the pages by himself, reading the exact words in the book, every page. That was unexpected either.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
they just surprised you.
Yeah, you must see so many surprising things about humanity, I think, doing what you do.
Yeah, and they know what's happening, even though they're a tiny bit delay, but they definitely have the ability to actually acquire new information in their system. You just need to find a way to help them show it or encourage them to show it. If they don't feel comfortable enough, they wouldn't show it.
So part of it is creating an environment where you provide the encouragement so that they get to know you and trust you that way to express. Well, it's not everyone could do that, I think, Travis.
I'm trying my best.
Yeah, I think it's very, very inspiring. Something I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, if you could gift someone a life-changing experience for learning, what would it be?
Okay. I dislike two types of things that people say when they come across an issue.
Yeah.
One is, I don't know. The other one is, I can't do anything about it. I've been doing this to some people. When they say, I don't know, I say, you do. And ask them to think.
Oh, that's a great way to make friends.
Oh, well, they're already my friend. So, So, yes, you definitely need to think and come up with something that can actually solve your problems in life or whatever issues you come across professionally or personally. So I just hate people telling me, I don't know, and I can't do anything about it. Maybe in some situations, you really can't do anything about it. It's out of your control. But I just don't believe those people who said, I don't know, because they do know. You just need to think and think harder.
Very powerful response. Am I hearing that the life-changing experience you would gift to someone is a change in mindset?
Yes. Oh, I think of something else too. I would encourage people to let go of things, not to worry about the past or assumptions about others. Like I said, when I grew up, there are expectations, pressure from the family members, society, the whole environment. But that's not actually their problem. I live my own life. So why do they put my issues or my behavior or whatever on to themselves? That's not, they don't need to worry about it. You just need to let it go or let it be. I don't know if it makes sense, but
No, I'm glad you mentioned that, Travis, because I think a life-changing experience for a lot of people would certainly be how to let go of the expectations they feel that are on them. And it strikes me that listening to you today, you have talked about exactly that process of learning how to do that. But I don't know if you learn how to do it or whether it was just always in you. You seem very determined and driven from the start that you were not going to have anyone tell you what to do and you were going to follow your own path. So it's interesting.
When it comes to my own issues, I tend to listen to myself. But professionally, I always say to people, I'm a better follower than initiator. I see myself as a good follower than a leader. Some people think the opposite, but I would rather follow because I can achieve tasks pretty well than starting things or telling others what to do.
And yet you've recently been appointed a team leader in your current role. Is that right?
When I'm a leader, I do not consider myself a leader who tells people what to do. I like to encourage people and create environment where everyone work collaboratively. So I thought that will be another opportunity for me to push myself out of that comfort zone and share my professional knowledge with others. I like to get everyone to work together and I will be a facilitator in a situation where I get inspired by the people in my team and they can be inspired by me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping.
Oh, I have no doubt from everything you've said today. I think your humility really comes through, and your resilience and your persistence and your ability to bring out the best in people and encourage them and create that environment where people can go further. I think that's so important.
Life is so hard.
It's hard enough. Right? Without, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I can make a couple of people's life easier, then I'm happy to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good spot to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Travis, for sharing your thoughts and experiences. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
I have no doubt that you're going to go on and do great things in your role. Thank you so much once again. It's been lots of fun.
No worries.
If you've enjoyed today's episode of Still Curious, check the show notes for a link to the full episode guide on the Grokkist website, where you'll also find many more interesting conversations like this one and a whole playground full of resources, events, and workshops to help you on your own Grokkist journey. You can also subscribe to Still Curious on your favourite podcast player and find us on socials at Grokkist. I've been your host, Daniel Pointer. Thank you for joining me, and see you next time on the Still Curious podcast.